Everyone, this is Mike Quincy, Connecting the Light. For anybody who hasn't received my email today or checked the guest details on BBS Radio, I'm afraid at the last minute Neil Redfern had to pull out because of a bereavement in his family. And fortunately, a friend and colleague whose site I kindly use has offered to fill in. And that is Nancy Tate, who, in her own way, is very well known for her wake-up calls that have regularly included people like St. Germain and Hatton. And she also has written books. She writes articles, poems, so she's quite versatile. And she's with us now. Welcome to the program, Nancy.
Well, thank you, Mike. It's good to be back.
Great. You're a woman of many talents by the sound of it, but where did all this start for you? I mean, when did you first realize that you were psychic or had that type of ability?
Well, it was actually since I moved out here from Maine out to the southwest of Arizona and in New Mexico, and that was back in, 1996 when I was here, and soon after that it began, and I didn't really realize the fullness of it until over the next few years I started developing it and writing poetry, and finally in 2000 and what was it? No, 1998, I was at my sister's in Oregon, and I went into a bookstore, and I picked up this book, You Can Channel, or How to Channel, and brought it home back to my sister's house, read it all, and at the end of it, it gave me an exercise to follow, and I followed the exercise, and I started channeling Confucius. And that's kind of started the whole thing, and over the next few years, I started channeling publicly, and in 2002, I got the Tree of the Golden Light website up with the help of Bob T, and the rest is history.
So, does that mean that you had an inkling to do it anyway, which is why you took the book?
Yes, it kind of, like, jumped out at me, you know, how that works.
Yes. Yes, I've heard that often. In fact, I have a friend who, funnily enough, does channeling, and she was in a bookstore, and she said literally she was walking by the shelves, and a book from above her fell out almost on top of her, and she realised it was a book that she was meant to read. And I've heard other incidences similar to that. It seems to me that if spirit wants you to do something, they make sure you know about it.
Yeah, they always find a way to wake you up and get your attention.
Absolutely, yes. Now, our audience may not know that I have to be grateful to you, which I do willingly, for giving me my chance to have my webpage and do my own thing. In fact, it was you who had St. Germain that came through you and wanted a word with me, which resulted in my being set up to do channeling myself. Now, when did you first have contact with St. Germain?
Oh, that came probably around in 2002. I had established the website, and I was doing channelings at my apartment there in town in Bisbee, Arizona, and so St. Germain was one of the first ones that was coming through. And a right solid old chap he was too, and he is.
Yeah. I found in the period of time that I was receiving St. Germain that his energy was quite different to what was later other contacts. Did you find the same thing?
Different from what?
Different from other contacts.
Oh,
he
yes.
Had quite a distinctive energy.
He certainly did. There were like two or three of them, like Sananda and Hatan and St. Germain,
yes.
And they each had their own individual energy for sure.
Yes. Talking about Hatan, He's been around in channeling terms for a long, long time. Did you know much about his background?
No, I didn't. I had really not heard of him before, and somewhere along the way, I was inspired to do a painting, and I didn't know what it was, but who it represented. But it was a painting of a like a gazebo or something like that, and I painted this being coming up into it from behind it, and it had a long flowing robe and bald head and wonderful face and so forth, and I didn't know who that was, who that represented, until another couple of years later when I realized that was Hatan, and he was coming, you know, that was my new guide, that new to me anyway, I mean, new to my knowledge. I eventually found out he'd been with me since before I was born, and kind of my main man, you know.
And, right.
So.
I can remember quite some years ago buying a book, very thick one, big one, and I can't think of the name of the group, but Hatton and people by the name of Soltec and others did a lot of channeling to this group, and it turned out to be the most wonderful book, full of different messages that they gave. And I think that went back to the 50s, so Hatton has been around for quite a long time.
Yes, he certainly has. He's been around as long as anyone else, if not more.
Yes, I was going to say, or even longer, yes. Right, so all of this somewhere led you to decide that you needed to set up a website. So what prompted you to do that?
Well, when I first got my computer, that was in 2002, and I had a psychic friend come and visit, and he gave a reading, and he said, "I'm prompted to tell you that you are going to be writing a lot of messages in very soon," and that's when the weekly messages were coming, and I was sending them out to certain people. I had like a personal list, and I was sending those out to the people, and then I would wake up in the morning after this psychic told me lots of messages were going to come. I'd wake up in the morning and I'd start getting this information, the words would start coming, and so that's when the wake-up call started, and I knew I had to, get the website going, because I had a feeling that I had a lot of things I was going to, be needing a website for, so that's when it started.
So what eventually, and I guess this must be in more recent times, inspired you to start writing a book? Because I believe, am I correct in saying that your first one was the menorah?
That's correct. I did start writing that in the winter of 96 when I was in Truth and Consequences, New Mexico. And I sat down one day to write to my family. I owned an RV at the time and was living in it. And I put the pen to paper and started writing this menorah. I had no idea that I was going to do that. And so I was obviously channeling that, but I didn't understand then really about channeling. I just knew that this information was coming, and I was having a lot of fun with it. So eventually I decided to make a book of it and get serious about writing, and got some books from the library, read up on about three books on writing, and I was on my way. So 10 years later is when I knew through a series of experiences of my opening to my own spirit and so forth, I knew what parts were going to go into the book, and eventually I knew 10 years later it was time to publish it, so I did.
So you obviously weren't in a hurry to get it published, but I guess when you did, you knew that the time was right for it.
Yeah, it was like, okay, I've everything in the book that was supposed to be, and now it's time to get it out there.
You've been doing the wake-up calls for a long, long time. Was that the emphasis at the start, to give out messages that would really awaken people?
It was for the people, but I always felt it was mainly for me, is part of my awakening and my introduction to, there were three who were channeling through me and identified themselves as aspects of me, and besides the others that I was, channeling, St. Germain and Sananda and so forth. And so that was also, it's almost like most of the messages applied to me at that time in some way and were helpful. And as we all know, we're all one, so there is nothing that comes through that is exclusively for one person. Mm. There's always, a lot of other people that the message is for. And so putting them out as wake-up calls and through the website and so forth was what I knew I had to do, It was wonderful trip.
Now, there are a lot of people, myself included, as you know, that believe very shortly we will reach a point in time at the end of 2012 when there will be a great magnification of the energies, and it will be an opportunity for those who sort of match the energies to ascend. What are your views about that? How do you see it sort of working out?
Well, I see that we're already in the process of ascension, and it's not something that you can, in my opinion, that you can put your finger on for a time. I don't think that come 2012, December, 20th or whatever it is, that we're all of a sudden going to be different and be in that beautiful state. It's a matter of time being bended, time being altered, reduced, and so forth, and used to explore and to coordinate the energies of ascension. And it happens, it will seem as if, for many people, that will happen all at once. And yet, happening all at once, a moment can stretch over days, months, years, for some people, depending on the energies of their evolvement. And it's so beautiful and divine that I can't even explain fully what I'm trying to say, but I feel that there'll be a time when we will have made a decision to go to that higher place, and it will be then a matter of being able to address the issues of the day in a beautiful way, much more so than we are now. We're beginning to do that now. More and more people are finding their nest egg of beauty and love and the energy that is required to take that step over that threshold and be able to see the truth of what everything really is. And I feel I had a vision a few years back, not too many, of there was a theater and there were these players on stage, maybe a dozen or so, and they were all kind of looking at each other and puzzled and scratching their heads and what's going on and what's going on. And then the scene shifted to the audience, and it was empty. And then the scene scene shifted to outside, and all these people were just going about doing their thing. It was beautiful. They were happy. It was wonderful. There was this joyous feeling going on. And what I knew was that they had decided they'd had enough of this play, and they were off doing their own thing, and they were happy about it.
Yeah.
And that's, but I think, you know, I kind of think that's what's going on.
Indeed, I agree with you. I think the very words, they've had enough and they want to change, are coming over very strongly now. And in the current situation where most of the world is in some kind of turmoil, I think people are looking at it and they're thinking things could have been different, and they don't want to go back to the old ways. And that very much applies, I think, in the States and elsewhere, where they've had the financial problems, and of course in many other aspects. But I think the people are taking back their power, and they're helping to forge a new way of living, and a peaceful one, hopefully.
I agree. It's you can see it so much more today than you could even last year. It's very heartwarming to see, and encouraging to see it happening so well.
Yes, I have to believe that part of the reason is a result of the incoming energies, because I think there's no doubt we're being helped to raise our consciousness. So I think what we see around us is the result of an increase in the mass consciousness, and I think it's taking us away from any attachments to the dark energies, which is really what we want.
Yeah, that's right. I think the less attention that we give to the things that do not please us, the more or the less that we're going to see of that, and the more energy that we will give to that that does please us. And that's one of the things that's going to take us to that place where we're out of the theater and we're having a wonderful life.
Yes, I agree with you indeed. I think it was my present channel that said what you focus on is where you place your energy, and although you may be complaining about something you don't like, if you focus on that, you wouldn't want to do it, but you're actually giving your energy to it.
Exactly. It's okay to be informed, but to then just let it go and turn around and hug the person next to you or continue with the wonderful thing that you're doing that makes you happy. That's where the secret is, I think.
Yes, I like the idea of hugging, but I don't know if a stranger would approve of it. Well, now, I believe it's correct to say you've also had an interest in UFOs. And I'm pretty sure you must have seen some, but have you ever had any really first-class sightings where you've actually seen a craft, say, as opposed to a light?
Yes, I am. Your first statement, I am definitely interested in UFOs, and I have, of course, I've seen them in the night sky, you know, the blinking lights that, you know, they're not planets, you know, they're not stars, you just know that they have all these beautiful lights. But I did see, it was almost like I could see the lines of it. There was a group of us outside of Bisbee, and it was in the evening, and we were watching, actually, for UFOs. And we saw one coming from the north, heading, like, north, you know, going south, and it was being followed by about 5 airplanes. You could see the lights. You could tell the difference. And then all of a sudden, and it was going quite fast, and then all of a sudden, it is like it immediately stopped, turned around, and went east. And just like that, just like a shot, you know, and it was beautiful. And then it came back over us. We were all down there on the ground saying, oh, beautiful, we love you, we love you. Oh, come on, we want to see you again. And it came back over us. It was a triangular craft. You could see the lights. And you could almost see the lines of it. And it took its time coming over us. And we felt such love emanating from it. And we knew it was a ship, for sure. And it was wonderful.
So following that, you didn't get some kind of contact where you perhaps got a message from any of the ETs?
Actually, that is when I think it was the next day. One of my friends who was there, and I, you know, she said, "Well, you saw that. That means you're getting a new guide." And that's when Hatan came, you know, into that picture. Oh, I didn't know then it was him, but that I knew, you know, that was when he came to me and urged me to the painting.
Right. Have you ever seen an ET at any time? I mean, whether in a psychic way or otherwise?
I think I did as a child. I did some dolphin mind meditations one time, and actually accessed memory of involvement with some of the extraterrestrials, and I wrote it all. I mean, I recorded the what came from this accessing the memories and so forth. And so I know as a child I did have contact with some extraterrestrials, and I've always planned someday to publish those reports and get it out there. It's an incredible experience when you realize something that seems bad is happening to you. And then you see, and then you're told the reason that this took place, and you realize that, well, what these ETs were doing was that they were trying to restore the love to their planet, and they were tapping into, and not just me, but many other people on Earth, and they were tapping into the emotions of the people, and they were doing things to the people that would bring on emotions, depending on what emotion they wanted, and they would study it, and then whatever supposed hurt came on was immediately erased. And so at some point I realized, when I saw a robot, one of the robots, with a tear in its eye, I knew, I knew that the love, that it worked, that they were able, through what they were doing, they were able to restore the love on their planet. And what they had done to lose the love in the center of their planet was some of the scientists had messed with the energies and of the core of their planet, and that had gradually led to them not being able to connect with that energy. And once they were able to understand the energy and the emotions of the heart and soul, they were able to restore it. And they were able to restore that for all of their planet. It actually saved them. So,
That's an interesting story. The only one I've heard that's very much like that, and I don't think these are the group of ETs you're talking about, was in respect of the Greys, who, as far as I can make out, also said a similar thing, that they messed around, I think, with their genetic or DNA patterns, and they actually engineered out the feelings of emotion, and then later they realized that was a great mistake and wanted to return it.
I think that some of the beings that did that, they may have been cooperating with the Greys, or maybe it was the Greys in part. I'm not sure exactly. You know, when you're a child of maybe, I think I might have been around 8 years old or something like that, you see things in a different way. Your perspective of what you're experiencing can be different from what it is in the language that you convey. So it's there's so much more out there than any of us have been able to comprehend. And there's so many different stories, and I know, you know, on the one hand, how can anyone think that we are here by ourselves and we're all there is? There's no way.
No, I agree. As an 8-year-old child, I assume they must have made you feel at peace, because otherwise you would imagine that would be a very frightening experience.
Yes, it was. It was. They were loving in their own way, and you could tell that they did not want to hurt you. They did not want to bring pain to you or anything, but they knew they had to bring these types of emotion forth to be able to monitor them and be able to restore it for them. And since we are all one, every part of this universe is all connected. That means that if you can't keep the wonderful connection going for one part of the universe, it's going to affect the rest of us. And so you have to be able to do that. You have to be able to, and you have to rise above the thought that, oh, they were terrible, and because they always made it right. I didn't remember any of that happened, you know, consciously. And so when it was time for me to be aware of this, then the means by which came to me.
Yes. I find in some stories I read of a similar type of contact, that when they do contact very young people, they often say words to the effect that we will be back sort of later, perhaps meaning many years later. Did they indicate anything like that to you?
Well, I thought that I remember from what came, but I don't know. I guess I might have had the sense that, you know, at some point that, yes, there would be, it was sort of like a reunion or something. Mm-hmm. In the you know, the access, the information I was able to access. But as I said, I didn't have a conscious memory of this at all. And and so, yes, I do feel that some of the, I feel that Hatong was not part of what was done, but he was there. Yeah. He was overseeing, or you know, I realized that Hatong has been with me all of my life, and that there would, you know, now I know there was a time when it was right for him to come forth, as
right.
he did.
Which, I guess with everything that's likely to happen with disclosure, first contact and what have you, he may well be one of those to appear on Earth anyway, so you may have a one-to-one meeting.
I think so. That's going to be a wonderful day.
Yes, indeed. Now, we've got to come on to one of the main subjects I wanted to talk to you about, and that is your latest book, Grandmother Ellie's Attic, which I understand is due to come out any day, is it?
It would be pretty quickly. I should be getting the proof copy of it any day, and once I have said yes, it's beautiful, and it's ready for press, then they will go to press and get it printed. So I feel that it will be, if not in June, it will be in July, be out there ready to ready for everyone to enjoy. It's going to be a beautiful book.
Right. Now, you say Grandmother Ellie's Attic. Was there any significance in you using Grandmother Ellie as a name there?
Well, the only thing I can think of, and it's funny, it just kind of came to me, my grandmother on my dad's side, her name was Effie. And I tried that and it didn't work right, you know, Grandmother Effie's Attic. And so I made it Ellie's, and that flowed. And so I used to go up in my grandmother's attic and just kind of play every once in a while. So it just seemed to be the perfect... At first, I was calling the book Beatrice, but I knew that wasn't right because, well, the girl's name is Beatrice. And so Grandmother Ellie's Attic just kind of evolved as right. the title.
Now, I love the idea of Sydney the genie.
Oh, he's a little one.
Yeah, a lovely one. And Beatrice, of course, I look upon that as an old-fashioned name, but you can never really say that because I look around now at what people name their children, and it seems what I call the old names are all coming back. But yeah. is there a Beatrice in your family? I mean, is that a deliberate?
Well, there is a Beatrice in my family. I don't think that's where this inspired from. One of my mother's brothers married Beatrice, and she's a beautiful, beautiful person. I really love her. But I have the feeling that because this book was channeled, and I have the feeling that there actually was a girl named Beatrice in Bisbee around the turn of the century.
Right.
I just have the feeling that this is the real thing.
Yes, great. Now, tell our listeners a little bit about it, what the background is and the sort of the theme with it through the book.
Well, the theme is, first of all, Beatrice's mother was in theater in Bisbee. And when she was in theater, she was carrying pregnant with Beatrice. And she used to, talk to her. And Beatrice could, they could kind of communicate, and as most can, or do. And so after, when Beatrice was maybe about 8 years old, her mother died. And so she went to her father, and she went to live with her grandmother Ellie's in Bisbee. And the first night that she was there, the first Saturday night, she woke up at midnight with the bells in the grandfather clock, chiming, and she looked to the side, and there was this Sydney. Well, she didn't know his name then, but this genie on the nightstand, looking at her with his grin. And that began a series of them, him coming once a month on Saturday at midnight, and they would go up to the attic where there was a trunk full of costumes that her mother had worn while in theater. And on each costume was a program telling what the play was about. And so they would go through these wonderful antics in going up to the attic, and Sydney is a real jester. He's just wonderful. He can make himself 12 feet tall and 12 feet wide. Mm-hmm. He can do all these wonderful things, and they have a good time together. And so they go up to they open up this trunk, and they find out what the characters are going to be, and then she dons the costume, puts it on, and immediately becomes the character. She and Jeannie both are transformed into that, you might say that play, into that personage, and they have an adventure. And in this adventure is a spiritual message. And I found that as I was writing it, each story became progressively deeper in meaning, in spiritual meaning, and the progression of this being once a month gave Beatrice time to integrate this message into her knowing and so forth, and in her life, and it's just a beautiful, beautiful story that and it all came. I wrote the first 6 chapters when I lived in Bisbee, and then a few years later, I hadn't written anymore for a while. And then this last year, when I returned to Bisbee, I wrote the last 6 chapters in 2 weeks. And so I knew it was time to get it ready to be released. And so I searched for a publisher, and we're right there on the brink.
Right. So by the sound of it, it's not simply a child's book. It's for young people or adults.
Yes, for sure. I've been saying children of all ages.
We're all children, aren't we?
Yes, we are. Yes, so we've got to keep on knowing that, because that's what keeps us young.
Yes, indeed. Well, that sounds very interesting. Where did you get the idea for Sydney, though, to have a sort of genie accompany her? I mean, does he come out of a bottle, or how does he arrive?
Well, various ways. He did come out of a bottle originally, and he just kind of is there in each chapter, maybe in a little different way, and so he just, you know, he's just there. And he has been coming to one person in each generation of her family for many generations, and so her mother and her grandmother and on down knew about Sydney. They had their visits by Sydney too.
Right.
And he just loves the family, and so this time it was for Beatrice.
I love the idea of that. It certainly sounds very original anyway.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Now let's just talk a little bit about some of the work you do on the website. What are the master readings that you give?
The people send me 6 questions, and I sit down at the keyboard and just type what comes and send it to them, and that's basically what it is. It takes me maybe about an hour and a half to, you know, from start to finish, and they're, you know, the information doesn't, it isn't like, okay, am I going to have is my boyfriend coming, you know, in the next week? Oh, yes, and his name is going to be da-da-da. It's not that. What it is it really gives information that will help the person to be able to open up to their own answers that they already have. If they didn't have the question, they wouldn't have the answer already for them. And that's what this information does. It helps them to access that information, and while at the same time consciously remember how they do it, and they can use that ability in their own lives. And so I really think that that's the way it is right now. We're ready for that kind of readings, you know.
So what do you do, ask people to email you when they're interested?
Yes. They can email me, and they go to the website on the page, and they find that they can email me and with the questions, and they can make payment, you know, to PayPal, or send me payment, you know, through the mail.
Right. Do you necessarily want to give your email address out now?
Oh, sure. It's Treat, which is spelled TREET and the number 07 at yahoo.com.
Right, okay. Now, I noticed on one of your web pages, I think this was in the Golden Light shop, that you mention ebooks. What is that about?
Oh, ebooks, that's something that people can buy online and read online. They can download it from the website, and there's a lot of ebooks out there now. That's a very steadily rising thing that's being made available, and it's very convenient for a lot of people. And so the first ebook, the only one so far that I've created, is Particles of Sand, and it's 3 short stories that I wrote over the years. since I've been here. And it's a good way for people to be able to access instantly a book that they want.
Right. Yes. And what are the audios that you sell through the shop?
Well, right now I have about 3 or 4 CDs, and of course the menorah and the e-book and the grandmother Ellie's attic will be there as soon as it's coming, and so as I begin to create more and more things, I will put them on the website. It's up on there, and so we'll just see what comes.
Right. Now, I know you have an interest in poems, and indeed, there have been times when some of that has got into your channeled messages, am I correct in saying you actually have a CD of your poems as well?
Yes, I do. The first one I did was called The Dance of Remembrance, and that includes some poems and pieces that I was channeling then, and I didn't realize, I didn't realize specifically that was channeling. Yeah, I knew it came from somewhere, but wasn't sure where. And so I actually created that CD through a local studio there where I was living, and had a really wonderful time putting together the music for the background and so forth, and it was a very creative thing to do that. I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
So.
And you have another CD, I gather, that contains guided meditations. What type of meditation is it?
Well, it's, as you say, it is a guided meditation. There's 2 of them, and I wrote them, and one of them is an antimatter meditation, and the other is a cosmic journey kind of thing, and the music in the background is I chose to support, and coordinate with, harmonize with the theme of the reading of the meditations.
That's very good. And are you adding to CDs or proposing to do that?
Yes, I am. I do have some in mind, and some thoughts, and I've written a lot of things that are just still on my computer and I haven't done anything with, and so I'm beginning to, to do that a little bit and get some ideas. So.
Oh, well, you're certainly very active. Now, all of these items I've spoken of can be obtained direct from the web, so perhaps it's a good time to give out the web address.
Oh, okay. That's let me find it. It's the Golden Light Shop, and I guess you would just go to goldenlightshop.com.
All right, that's fine. Good. Finally, just coming to the present day and some of the problems that surround us, or the subjects that really are getting attention. Some people appear to be very impatient with President Obama. I personally think his hands are tied and we do have to be patient with him. And I think the Gulf oil spill perhaps is something people expected him to grab hold of and get something done a bit quicker. What do you think personally about President Obama?
I think that he's taken on quite a job, and I feel that he has a plan, and it's not only on a soul level. I think he's conscious of part of this, and I think he's a very highly enlightened being, and that he knows that if he moves too quickly and too drastically, you might say, on some of the measures that need to be taken, that it won't work. For one thing, there have to be more people who are aware of just what has been going on, and to be able to do their part and to be able to lend more positive energy towards, you know, what has to be done, and to support President Obama when the time comes, to stand behind him and be able to lend their support to him rather than try to knock him down because they don't understand the fullness of what is has been going on and what has to be done.
Right. When I think of President Obama, I remember, I think it was Andrew Santiago's travels back in time, and if it wasn't Andrew, it's certainly someone else, who said that he met Obama when Obama was age 21, and they already knew then that he was going to become the President of the United States. I have to think to myself that someone who is penciled in, if you like, as a spiritual leader, different from many of the earlier presidents, is someone special.
Mm-hmm. Yes, for sure. I mean, he is actually, I don't know how many are listening now who know about the Mushaba Force. There is a Mushaba planet in the Pleiades and the Mushaba race, and they are the original black race, and they were the ones, the first ones to come to Earth and settled in Africa. And Obama is one of those, we have been told. And he truly knows. There's so much about the Mushaba information that is prevalent today that it's no wonder that it's coming out and being known, because this is the time when we are to be able to access that Mushaba force within us, each one of us. The earth was imbued with the Mushaba force way back when it was being formed, and this was for the purpose of us, each one of us, having the force inside of us. And when we were created in the image of man, from the Anunnaki, from the clay of the earth, as they say, that is when we became, you know, when the force, the Mushaba force, became part of us, and in a physical way, and as it was already in a spiritual way. And so it was planned that when we as humanity got to a certain elevation in our evolvement, that would activate the Mushaba force within us, so that we would then be able to really tap into what that is about. It's about creativity, love, empowerment, and the ability to restore the freedom. It's about freedom, too. And so that's why since 1987, we've been able to, we made that decision not to go to Armageddon, and so that's what turned things in the direction that we are now in and still traveling in. And now we are able to access that ability to create our world in the way that we intend, in a freedom and in the way that represents love in the most powerful way.
Right. Yes, I've seen you mention the Mushaba word quite often in your writings, and I've often wondered exactly what it was. So clearly, from what you said, it's a higher energy. Now, Nancy, believe it or not, we've virtually come to the end of our time. And it's gone by so quickly because we're having a nice chat here.
Yes.
I've got to announce next week's guest, which won't take me many minutes. So have you got a final word for our listeners before you disappear? And thank you very much for coming on the program at such short notice.
Well, thank you, Mike. I'm glad I was able to fill in for Nicholas. I'm sure that he can come back another time when it's better for him. And I'm so grateful to be able to be here today and talk with all of you wonderful people. And Mike, thank you so much. And be watching for Grandmother Ellie's attic, because she's going to bring you all beautiful gifts.
That's wonderful. Yeah, I can imagine people dreaming about that. Sounds a lovely story. Thank you. Thanks again, Nancy. Very nice to have you on the program. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Mike. Bye.
Right, friends, that was interesting. Certainly something a little bit different, maybe, to what we normally talk about. My guest next week is Alexander Price, who is a writer and Sufi dervish. And he considers himself blessed to have had many wonderful spiritual friends and guides in his lifetime. And most significantly, he was a dervish in a Sufi order for 7 years, forming a powerful and enduring bond with a distinguished lineage of enlightened masters that reaches back to the Prophet Muhammad. So I hope you can join me. That again sounds like a very interesting program. Thank you for being with me today. God bless you all.